What does the guidebook say?
It says Orlando Bloom stood right here in his underwear. John, come here quick. Gollum dropped the ring somewhere right around here.
My precious!
Wait! What are you doing? This isn't what defines New Zealand, guys. Of course not. What about the agriculture and all the birds and trees that we saw and the conservation efforts? And how can we forget the Maori people? Let's take a look. Welcome everyone to the New Zealand 2012 Cross Cultural Chapel.
Kia ora, mate.
Kia ora.
I bought you a biscuit.
Oh, sweet as, bro.
Cheers. Hey, Laura, I bought you a cookie.
Oh, thanks, man.
See ya.
During our trip, we need someone to help us with logistics, providing transportation, food, and contact for the various speakers we heard and the places we stayed. So we hired Adventure Specialties. It's a Christian company that works with groups doing adventure and wilderness experiences. We chose them due to the secular nature of New Zealand and the Christian background of our university. The company was founded by Lindsay Simkin and his wife, Glenda. And while he was with us for a majority of the trip, we spent some significant time with some of the other employees, mainly Josh, Mark, and Jared. And although we hired them to work, the bond we formed with them was more personal, just given the amount of time we spent with them being in constant contact during bus rides, working in the kitchen, etc. And speaking of bus rides, here's the route we took. Throughout our whole trip, we spent more than 200 hours on the bus, which is a long time. So we're gonna show you what a typical day with Lindsay on the bus is like right now.
All right, everybody, we got a big day here. Got a lot of places to travel to. So do me a favor and check for your seat partners before we head out here. Make sure we have everybody.
We got it.
All right.
Corbin's not here.
Who?
Corbin.
Oh, Corbin again? What is it with that guy? Okay, you guys wanna hear another Australian joke while we're waiting? All right. How do you know Jesus wasn't born in Australia? Because they couldn't find three wise men. Or a virgin.
Hey, Eric, it's really hot in here. Tell them to turn the air conditioning on. We're all hot.
Greg, Aaron wants the AC on.
Jen, Eric wants the AC on.
Oh, no, it's cold.
Hey, Lindsay, you want to test to see if that air conditioner is working?
Oh, yeah, all right. Everybody wants it on?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Let me just give it a try here. All right, yeah, I think we're good. We got it going there. Oh, where's that going?
Greg, yep. Personal question time. What is your favorite color?
Probably have to be blue.
Wow, that tells me a lot about you as a person, Greg, on a deep level. I appreciate that. Personal question number two. Have you ever had your toes sucked?
Ew, what?
Ah, here's Corbin. There he is.
Sorry, guys. How long is the trip today, Lindsay?
Well, Corbin, how long is a piece of string? All right, let's get going.
As part of our trip, we looked at some sustainability and some environmental impact issues. One of the things we really wanted to keep track of was carbon footprint, our impact on the environment. When discussing carbon footprint, it's convenient to use a set of units, kilograms of carbon dioxide. There's more greenhouse gases than carbon dioxide. It's just, you just convert everything into that equivalency so that you can make direct comparisons between, say, our numbers and the numbers someone else came by through research or another study. The big number for us is 190,000 kilograms of CO2. That's a really big number, so here's a kind of a picture to help that make sense. If you planted 5,000 trees and let them grow to 10 years, that would be about as much carbon as that they would take out of the air in that time, or the amount of carbon taken out of the air by 42 acres of pine forest. We put about 11,000 kilometers on our bus, 8,000 on our car. That sounds like it would be a big part of our carbon footprint. You know, driving two vehicles around, one of which is a fairly large bus. Unfortunately, about 87% of that total 190,000 number is just the airlines, just flying there and back. And that raised an issue we looked at. You know, what's the ethics of flying all the way to New Zealand to look at, you know, its sustainability, environmental issues, when we know just how big of an impact we've made through, you know, just flying there?
Yeah, so a couple of times we wondered, is it worth it to fly over here? And we all agreed it most certainly was worth it. Cross-cultural is our life-changing experience, and what we saw and learned over there will inform how we live the rest of our lives. So instead of paying companies for carbon offsets for our travel, we can make up for our travel by living the rest of our lives more sustainably, but because of what we learned in New Zealand, and also through sharing our story with other people. Part of that is this chapel, so we're going to continue on by sharing a conservation skit with you.
Hi, everybody. I'm an adorable New Zealand possum. I'm nothing like my ugly American cousins. I'm cute and cuddly and just all around adorable. I'm originally from Australia, and I caught a boat over to New Zealand, and it's really pretty awesome. No predators, no anything to really worry about at all. Just a bunch of nice people and beautiful trees I can just have a good time with, and an egg every once in a while. It's just, it's a beautiful
situation.
So this is basically how conservation is carried out in New Zealand. Originally, there are only two species of mammals on New Zealand, and they're both bats. The vast majority of the rest of the wildlife consisted of birds, many of which are only found in New Zealand. Maori and European settlers then came to New Zealand and brought animals with them, such as possums, stoats, rats, hedgehogs, and dogs. These animals are now considered pests because they have helped to decimate bird populations, mainly by eating eggs and young. Possums strip lots of leaves off of native trees, and this ends up killing them and also destroying potential bird nesting areas. Mammal traps and 1080 poison are used to try and kill off these pests, and some of us saw this firsthand when we volunteered with a trapper named Andrew Shepherd in Makarora Valley. Most of New Zealand is for this type of conservation, but there are still some who are against it, and it continues to be a controversial issue to this day. Next, we have a song written by John Nice with an interpretive dance.
Okay, I basically wrote this song for Jim, our faculty leader. He really likes birds, and he wanted us to really get into birds too. So this song goes out to him, and it's basically written from his perspective. And Jacob Kaufman will be playing the role of Jim in this. I embarked from EMU with 22 undergrad students. The main goal of this cross-cultural was New Zealand ecological rudiments. I wanted them to learn the plants and trees, a bit about the people and land, but most of all, most importantly, to make them understand about the birds. The birds here face a predicament, because New Zealand's never touched another continent. Some birds forgot how to fly, 'cause they had no reason why. And when people came with animals, the birds were introduced to hungry mammals. The ones who couldn't fly were the first to die. Few, if any, remain today. Let's see if we can spot these birds, the very few who survived the purge. And we'll learn their name and how to hear them call. And you'll be an EMU bird watching star.
Look, Jim!
Look, there goes a kiwi. Notice how it's got no wings. It burrows underground in daytime, but nighttime's when it sings. And this is just a glimpse of one of the rarest birds on Earth.
Guys, what's that stoat doing?
Somebody wake the kiwi up! Seriously, those things are endangered!
Well, that was quite traumatic. But we're right back on the search. It's a New Zealand native parrot. Oh wow, the kia on its perch. This is just another glimpse at one of the rarest birds on Earth.
Oh no, a possum! Save the egg! They don't stand a chance.
Here we've got a morph. I just can't take it. There's too many invasives. What's a bird to do?
Don't be so sad, Jim. Remember all the rare New Zealand animals that we've seen? We took a trip to Tiri Tiri Matangi Island, Ark in the Park, all those bushwalks we've gone on. Look, my journal's just full of really pretty pictures of all the New Zealand animals we've seen. So get up, come on, let's go find some more birds.
I came back to EMU with 22 new ecologists who've seen some hope for change to come, who brought it back for everyone. But most importantly, my students finally learn their birds.
Laura, we're going to the beach in 5 minutes. Bring your jandals and your togs.
Did you pack the chili bin with fizzy drink?
Yes, I did. Don't forget your jumper, just in case it gets cold. Hey, Laura, we're going to the beach in 5 minutes. Don't forget your bathing suit and flip-flops.
Did you pack the cooler with soda?
Yes, I did. Also, bring a sweatshirt, just in case it gets cold.
During our journey, we visited a few intentional Christian communities, and one of which was Ngā Tiawa, and the picture shows the chapel at Ngā Tiawa. What I'm reading is a journal from our time there. Today we left Otoko Marae and traveled to the Ngā Tiawa community. When we first arrived, the sparseness hit us immediately. The housing, mostly under construction, held no enduring touch of creativity, as if it slid off the symmetrical 90-degree angles and bare complexion. Small patches of grass in sight were swallowed by dusty pathways and a parking area. I was overpowered by confusion with a greater sense of doubt. The article I'd read didn't help much, as I had formulated an image of a presumptuous community who embraced intentionality with all of the self-righteous attitudes that so often overshadow the good. It was also apparently a Pākehā community that ran itself as a marae, and we'd already lived in Māori marais for several nights on various occasions. The concept of biculturalism was as foreign to me as the woman standing outside of our bus with the patchwork dress and horn-rimmed glasses. We were led inside a large room with a few worn couches, the space immediately creating a bit of an echo as 20-some of us shuffled in. Glancing around the crowd about two-thirds our size, I found kind eyes and welcoming smiles. An obviously Pākehā man, looking the same age as a few of my peers, began speaking in Maori. We'd experienced a pōwhiri, which is a Maori welcome ceremony, several times before. The first few times, the words of speeches worked themselves through our inexperienced ears. Although they held no translated meaning, they held meaning in the sounds. As Maori words lift off the tongue, there's a rounded echo quality, as if each sound reverberates off the sides of the mouth as they escape. Yet as we've sat through these lengthy foreign speeches before, I must admit, they had lost a bit of the romantic quality they once held. However, This Pakeha man spoke a language as well as some of the Maori. Each sound had been practiced, each word studied, and unlike a few others on Moraes, it added a quality in its brevity. It was followed by the waiata, a Maori song, Te Araha. What came out wasn't presumptuousness, but humility. Over the next few days we spent at Natiawa, this humility continued to reveal itself in various ways, from the meals that were just as delicious as they were organic, to the three-a-day chapel services held in the gorgeous, newly built wooden structure. These times of worship were my favorite. The flickering of the flames that each person held seemed to dance to the Tizé-style chants. It wasn't the four-part harmony that non-Mennonites and non-singers like myself were terrified by. Rather, these simple repeating phrases unified all of our voices together, the visitors and the residents sharing in one experience. Each time the phrase is sung, it reaches a depth of meaning that only comes with repetition. When we left, we had visited a community rich with experiences and passion. I'm sure that each one of us was inspired by every person we met, as they shared their stories of radicalism and migration. Some were even arrested as a result of their determination towards change. Justin Duckworth, the founder of Natiawa, encouraged us by saying, "Disobey your parents. There's nothing worse than a 20-something-year-old who's boring."
We're going to talk briefly about the Maori language. Maori are the indigenous people of New Zealand, and the Pakeha are the New Zealand people of English descent. So in the New Zealand culture, the Maori language is just as important as the English language, and it's incorporated into everyday use.
Something important you might want to know about Maori language is that the WH, the letters WH, makes an F sound. So the first two words up there, whānau, which means family, and whakapapa, which means genealogy. And the other words, marae, is a, it's our equivalent of a church. It's the Maori's sacred meeting house. A pōwhiri is a welcoming ceremony onto that marae, which we'll show you in a couple minutes. And a waiata is a song that you'll sing.
Apart from its breathtaking and adventure-inviting landscapes, its unique bird and plant life, and the national obsession with rugby, one thing that defines New Zealand is the relationship between the Maori, the Tangata Whenua, people of the land, and the Pakeha, the European New Zealanders. For many tourists, the experience of Maori culture doesn't go much beyond the overwhelming presence of Maori place names, tradition-preserving cultural shows, and potentially authentic souvenir carvings. However, our opportunity to stay on four different marais across the country allowed us to have a much more intimate understanding. As manuhiri, visitors, we cannot set foot on the grounds of a marae before participating in the pōwhiri, a sacred ceremonial welcome that went something like this. A single female voice called us slowly through the front gate and across the lawn in her native tongue, her outstretched hands trembling. After pausing to silently remember and welcome the spirits of our own ancestors, responsible for our being there in that moment, we took a seat while a male representative of the Maori community sitting across the way stood and delivered e whai korero, an invitation into their world in the native language, after which they all stood to sing a waiata, a song indicating their concordance with their speaker. It was then our turn for one of us to stand and introduce our group, say a word of thanks, and then sing our waiata as a group, with which we will later conclude our chapel. The final step was the hongi, the pressing of noses and sharing of breath, symbolizing oneness, which every one of us performed with each one of them. We were then able to enter the whare nui, the elaborately designed meeting house representing the iwi, or tribe's, founding ancestor, but not before removing our shoes in order to leave the disorder of the world outside the tapu, or sacred space inside the whare. Our group bond was both tested and strengthened as we all slept among the intricate carvings in the one large room of the whare together, in one case with the Maori community themselves. We were a part of the tribe as we participated in the preparation of a hangi, a meal cooked in the ground, during our second marae stay, and we were ever inspired by the Maori's extensive connection to their history, the land, and each other.
The effects of colonization are still visible in the Maori community. They have the lower literacy rates, the lower incomes, and for every 100,000 people in jail, 700 of them are Maori. To depict this situation, I wrote a poem titled Once Were Warriors. From the mountains of the north to the slums of the south, from the blood of the mighty to the labor of the weak, from the deeps of the forest to the shades in the jails, from the pride of their ancestors to the shame of their mothers, from the line of the brave to the ones who gave up hope. Once were power, once were fire, once were warriors.
If you look closely, you can see Maori culture spread throughout New Zealand. One area in particular is in the nation's passion for rugby. The national team, the All Blacks, performs a haka, or war dance, before every game. The traditional haka translates to, "It is death, it is death. It is life, it is life. This is the hairy man who brought the sun and caused the sun to shine. A step forward, a step upward, another step upward. A step upward and another. The sun shines." The All Blacks have used this haka for years, and to this day it still holds meaning in Maori culture. And now, the haka. Aramai! Whakararangi! Upe! Toru! Pa!
Kamate, kamate, kaora, kaora. Kamate, kamate, kaora, kaora. Tene te tangata, puhuru, huru. Nana ne te tiki mai, I whakawhiti tera. A upane, a kaupane. Upane, kaupane, whiti tera. Hi!
So that was our waiata to support all of our chapel. We want to thank you all for coming. And could we actually have Jim and Kathy and Theodore and Tobias come on stage, please? So we spent, like a lot of different cross-culturals spend time apart, but we spent this entire cross-cultural together, except for about a week of homestays. So we got to know each other really well. And we have a gift for the Yoders because they were awesome. So our gift is a picture of all of us after a long hike, and it's just all of us staying together. And also, there's four tickets in there for you guys to see The Hobbit when it comes out.